The following is a Bhakti Shastri class given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on August 5th, 2007, in Tewaco, New Jersey, USA.
This nectar of devotion is the ultimate experience. In this world, everyone is looking how to enjoy. They are going here, there, everywhere, trying to find some enjoyment. They are lacking the knowledge, the understanding, that if they can just take to the path of bhakti, then they can relish unlimited enjoyment at every minute. There are many different aspects to bhakti. Today we are discussing the most important aspect of bhakti, the doorway to bhakti. Bhakti is a very nice room to live in, but if you don't get through the door, then you're not in the room. So we have to know how to enter the door of bhakti. Therefore, today we are studying techniques of hearing. Because without hearing, there is no entrance into bhakti. Who is the great acharya of hearing? Of course, that is Maharaj Parikshit. He became perfect simply by expert hearing. He was a great king. He was not only Raja, but he was Rishi. You see, in the Vedic ages, the kings were called Rajarshi because they were Raja and Rishi, both at the same time. So when he was cursed by that boy, Sringi, that foolish boy, Sringi, he had the power actually to reverse that curse. It would have been no difficulty for him to reverse that curse. But he thought, no, this is a very great opportunity. Now I have my death warning. I know in 7 days I will leave. So let me prepare to leave the body, give up my kingdom, and sit on the holy river, preparing for death. So many, many great personalities came. And even though they were all great sages, they had different opinions what he should do. It's like in our ISKCON. Someone has this opinion, someone has that opinion. There are many, ISKCON is full of great sages, but they have so many different opinions. We should do like this, no, we should do like that. So it was confusing what he should do at the time of death. But then, when Shukadev Goswami appeared on the scene, all confusion finished. As soon as the great acharya, a great acharya like Shukadev Goswami comes, immediately all confusion finished. Everyone knew, even though he's a young boy, can you imagine? He's a 14-year-old boy. And such great, exalted sages from all over the universe have come, very elderly sages. Even his father was there. You see. But everyone knew this is the one who should say. They can immediately understand this is the great authority. So, he simply heard from Shukadev. And we also see another great acharya of hearing. That is our beloved Srila Prabhupada. You may know the story how when Prabhupada went to Vrindavan. Of course, he had very little contact with Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati physically. In his heart, he always lived with him at every minute. But he was very busy in his household affairs, running his pharmaceutical business. But he took some time out, finally, from his busy life, household life, to go to Vrindavan to associate with Guru Maharaj on the Vrindavan Parikrama. And every evening there would be discourse by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. Now, of course, here in New Jersey, New York City, etc., the nightlife means so many sinful activities, you see. But in Vrindavan, the nightlife there is very sublime. You go, just like in Vrindavan town now, in the evening, everyone likes to go for darshan, especially during Kartik. Our Krishna Balaram Mandir is so full, you can hardly get in the door. It's so packed, you see. So the Vrindavan nightlife is you go for darshan. So, in the evening, at the same time that the darshan is going on, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he is giving discourse. And if you have heard any of his lectures or read any of his writings, you know it's very, very erudite English. The materialistic demeanor cannot possibly stretch to the transcendental autocrat who is ever inviting the fallen conditioned souls in this way. And that's a more simple, it becomes much more complex than that. That's one of his most simple preachings. You have to get out one of these big unabridged dictionaries, you see. And these are not native English speakers that he's preaching to also. So, when he's giving the pravachan, practically everyone thinks, I think I will go for darshan. They wouldn't stay to hear Guru Maharaj, you see. But our Srila Prabhupada at that time of Bhai Charan Day, his mood was different from the others. You see. His mood was, I could understand or I could not understand, but still I would go on hearing. You see. So he would be one of the few that would stay and hear Guru Maharaj speak. Now in our ISKCON, we have a system. When Prabhupada was here, it was the same system. The temple president, he recommends to the spiritual master. The spiritual master doesn't just initiate on his own volition, but he takes recommendation from the temple authority. That was the system we did when Prabhupada was here also. Prabhupada would only initiate if the temple president gave recommendation, you see. So the same system in the Gaudiya Math was going on. So the devotees in Alhaba, they recommended that this Abhay Charan Day, Guru Maharaj, we think you should initiate him. He said, oh yes, I remember him, he hears very nicely. So he became, just by his hearing very nicely, he became noted by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati that yes, I will initiate him. So this is the... We see this in Pariksit Maharaj, we see this in our beloved Srila Prabhupada, that the ability to hear very, very nicely, you see, this is the qualification for the receiving the mercy of Guru. And Prabhupada explained also in this connection. He said, because I heard nicely, now I can speak nicely. So if you have a desire to preach, if you want to push forward this movement to save the fallen conditioned souls from the hellish nightmare of Kali Yuga, then you will not be potent to preach unless you hear very nicely. You see. So this chapter we are studying here, it is the most important chapter, Techniques of Hearing. So now we will read something and discuss hearing. The beginning of a Krishna consciousness and devotional service is hearing, in Sanskrit called Shravanam. All people should be given the chance to come and join devotional parties so that they may hear. This hearing is very important for progressing in Krishna consciousness. When one links his ears to give oral reception to the transcendental vibrations, he can quickly become purified and cleansed in the heart. Lord Chaitanya has affirmed that this hearing is very important. It cleanses the heart of the contaminated soul so that he becomes quickly qualified to enter into devotional service. and understand Krishna consciousness. So, as I was explaining, this is the doorway. That is reconfirmed here by Srila Prabhupada. Through hearing, you enter into devotional service. That is the doorway, hearing. Continuing on. In the Garuda Purana, the stress on hearing is expressed very nicely. It is said there, the state of conditioned life in the material world is just like that of a man lying unconscious having been bitten by a snake. This is because both such unconscious states can be ended by the sound of a mantra. When a man is snake bitten, he does not die immediately, but first becomes unconscious and remains in a comatose condition. Anyone who is in the material world is also sleeping, as he is ignorant of his actual self or his actual duty and his relationship with God. So materialistic life means that one is bitten by the snake of Maya illusion, and thus without any Krishna consciousness is almost dead. Do you understand? Without Krishna consciousness it is almost dead. Yeah. Now these so-called dead men bitten by a snake can be brought back to life by the chanting of some mantra. There are expert chanters of these mantras who can perform this feat. Similarly, one can be brought back into Krishna consciousness from the deadly unconscious state of material life by hearing of the Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. In the fourth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 29th chapter, verse 40. The importance of hearing of the pastimes of the Lord is stated by Shukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikshit. My dear King, one should stay at a place where the great acharyas, holy teachers, speak about the transcendental activities of the Lord. And one should give oral reception to the nectarian river flowing from the moon-like faces of such great personalities. If someone eagerly continues to hear such transcendental sounds, then certainly he will become freed from all material hunger, thirst, fear, and lamentation, as well as all illusions of material existence. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also recommended this process of hearing as a means of self-realization in the present age of Kali. In this age, it is very difficult to follow thoroughly the regulated principles and studies of the Vedas which were formerly recommended. However, if one gives oral reception to the sound vibrated by great devotees and acharyas, that alone will give him relief from all material contamination. Therefore, it is the recommendation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that one should simply hear from authorities who are actually devotees of the Lord. Hearing from professional men will not help. If we hear from those who are actually self-realized, then the nectarian rivers like those which are flowing on the moon planet will flow into our ears. This is the metaphor used in the above verse. You may wonder about this reference to the moon planet. Because what NASA has shown us is a dry wasteland. But here it is stated that there are nectarian rivers flowing on the moon planet. That means they have not really understood what is the moon. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, a materialistic person can give up his material hankerings only by becoming situated in Krishna consciousness. Unless one finds a superior engagement, he will not be able to give up his inferior engagement. In the material world, everyone is engaged in the illusory activities of the inferior energy. But when one is given the opportunity to relish the activities of the superior energy performed by Krishna, then he forgets all his lesser pleasures. When Krishna speaks on the battlefield of Kurukshetra to the materialistic person, it appears that this is simply talk between two friends. But actually, it is a river of nectar flowing down from the mouth of Sri Krishna. Arjuna gave oral reception to such vibrations, and thus he became freed from all the illusions of material problems. So this is a nice point. If we simply give oral reception to that nectarian river known as Krishna Katha, this is spoken by the Vaishnavas, not by the professional men. But if we hear when the Vaishnavas speak, then that nectarian river entering from their mouths into our ears, you see, will free us from all of our problems. Do you have any problem?
Yes.
Does anyone here have problem? You see, if you feel that you have problems in your life, then there's no problem. You simply hear about Krishna from the Vaishnavas.
Yeah.
That's all. And all your problems are finished. You see. Actually, our Prahlad Maharaj, he said, I have no problem. You see, he has heard from Narad Muni, so he has no problem. He says, my only problem is how to save all these rascals who are not hearing about Krishna. You see. So this is such a nice thing. If you ever feel you have any problems, you just hear from the Vaishnavas. You can open a Prabhupada's books, hear a Bhagavatam class, put on a tape, a CD, you know, hear some Krishna Katha from the Vaishnavas, and then immediately your problems are all gone. We don't need psychiatrists. All we need is Krishna Katha. And immediately all of our problems are finished.
Prabhu, can I ask something now?
Yeah, all right.
In the same context, like, I mean, we have the problems all the time, material life, and we pray to the Krishna, and what if, like, I mean, we hear the kathas, or we do the some sort of the shravanam from the sources, bona fide sources, still we are in problem.
That's because your hearing is not deep enough. You're only skimming the surface. You see. The material ocean is a big hurricane going on, you see. But the spiritual world, when you go deep within that ocean, if you're only going slightly into the hearing, then you're still feeling the effect of the storm on the surface. If you go deep, 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 deep into that ocean of hearing, shravanam, then there's not even a slight trace of the material nature anymore. So your hearing, that is very good, and if you're still feeling problems, that means you're not diving deeply enough into the nectarian ocean of Krishna Katha. Yeah. So this class today is a very important class, because here we are teaching you the techniques of how to go deeper, 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 deeper into that ocean, so that you will factually experience that all of your problems are now are history. Wouldn't that be nice for all problems to simply be something in the history? No more problems. In the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd chapter, verse 15, it is stated, a person who desires unalloyed devotional service to Lord Krishna, who is praised by transcendental sound vibrations, shall always hear about his glorification and transcendental qualities. This will surely kill all kinds of inauspiciousness in the heart. Now we move on to the next item, expecting the Lord's mercy. So the question is, this chapter is techniques of hearing and remembering. And now we are going into expecting the Lord's mercy. So there has to be some connection between hearing and expecting the Lord's mercy. So let's see if we can understand what is that connection. In the 10th canto, 14th chapter, verse 8, it is said, my dear Lord, any person who is constantly awaiting your causeless mercy to be bestowed upon him and goes on suffering the resultant actions of his past misdeeds, offering you respectful obeisances from the core of his heart, is surely eligible to become liberated, for it has become his rightful claim. Does anyone know the Sanskrit for this verse? Anyone know this? It's very beautiful Sanskrit. Tate nukampam susamikshamano bunjana evatma kritang vipakam tadvag vipurvi vidadang namaste jivetayo mukti pradesadhaya bak. This is actually one of the most wonderful verses that is there anywhere in the Vedic literature. Because the fact is, at the present moment, we are suffering like anything, isn't it? We are suffering like anything in this material existence. But this verse gives us a way to perceive, experience our suffering in such a way that it's no longer suffering. The devotee of the Lord, he is constantly, he has great faith in the mercy of Krishna. You see, he knows that Krishna is merciful upon him. He knows that Krishna is never cruel to him. He knows that Krishna is bestowing unlimited mercy upon him at every minute. He has absolute faith in this principle. Therefore, even when he is suffering, just like the various sufferings are there, as we've been discussing, the fourfold misery, the threefold misery, the seven whips, hunger, thirst, lamentation, illusion, old age and death. That's six, isn't it? What's the seventh one? Seventh whip. You know the seventh whip?
Fear?
Fear is, yes.
I don't know the seventh word. But I know we're being beaten by him. That, that's whatever it is.
Fear.
Huh?
Fear.
Fear, okay. So, the fact is we are being whipped around by the seven whips. So, how to come out of this suffering of the whippings of these seven whips? This verse is the key. In other words, if I'm suffering, then I should think, well, this is because I did something wrong in the past. Even if I'm initiated and my guru took my karma, it's described that there's still some residual karma from previous sin. It's like when you pull the fan, the plug on the fan, there's still some residual action still going. You see, it doesn't come to a dead stop immediately. You see, there's still some residual action from our past sins. So that means we don't get our karma as heavy as we would have gotten it. We still get a little bit just to sober us up, keep us from getting carried away by false ego or something like that. So, whatever suffering I'm getting, I'm thinking, well, this is Krishna's special mercy on me. I'm being, the final residue of my past sinful activity now is being cleared off. Just like I initiated one time a gentleman who was a former Catholic priest. And as soon as he got, he was in very good health, but as soon as he got initiated, he found out he had prostate cancer, terminal. I mean, and I called him up and he was in bliss. He said, I'm being freed from my reactions. This is purifying me of all my, and then he actually, the man, he had a recovery and then he had a relapse and he was finished. But actually, I called him, he was in a joyful state that he had come down with cancer, that I was being freed from my past sin, you see. So the devotee, when he suffers any sort of suffering condition, whether it's, you know, employment-related, family-related, health-related, you know, IRS-related, any sort of suffering condition he goes through, he thinks that this is Krishna's mercy upon me. I'm burning off the reactions for past misdeeds, And he's offering respectful obeisances to Krishna. So what does that mean, offering respectful obeisances? It means he's thanking Krishna. Thank you, Krishna, for giving this to me. Thank you very much. You see, he's always in that mood. He's gratefully suffering. He's thankfully suffering. And in that spirit, he's certainly eligible for becoming liberated, if it has become his rightful claim. In other words, he's actually already liberated. In such a state of mind, that devotee is already a liberated soul. Even while within this body, even while burning off the residue of his past karma, if he's in that mood of appreciating every single thing as Krishna's unlimited mercy upon him, he's already liberated soul. He's already liberated. So one who is in this mood of completely expecting the Lord's mercy at every minute, when he hears about Krishna, you see, this is an answer to your query here. Such a person who's taking everything as the mercy of Krishna, and when they hear about the Lord, they go deep. They go very, very, very deep into it. And they don't feel the pinchings of this material nature anymore. And any pinching, just like Kunti Devi, Vipada Shanti Tashashva Tatra Tatra Jagad Guru Bhavanam Darshanam Yasyad Apanar Bhava Darshanam. Whenever they are actually eager to be put into difficulties, Kunti was begging, "My dear Lord, I want more difficulties. Please give me, heap the problems on me. More and more and more, because when I'm in a great problematic situation, then I have nothing to do except think of you. If I'm not in distress, I'll probably forget you. So please, keep me in constant distress." That was her mood, you see. So for such a person, a calamity is only a so-called calamity. They don't know anything as being a calamity. They see everything as the blessing of the Lord at every minute. So if we can cultivate this mood, you see, this will open the door to pure devotional service. So now we'll continue. This statement of Srimad Bhagavatam should be the guide of all devotees. The devotee should not expect immediate relief from the reactions of his past misdeeds. No conditioned soul is free from such reactionary experiences, because material existence means continued suffering or enjoying of past activities. If one has finished his material activities, then there is no more birth. This is possible only when one begins Krishna conscious activities, because such activities do not produce reaction. Therefore, as soon as one becomes perfect in Krishna consciousness, he is not going to take birth again in this material world. A devotee who is not perfectly freed from the resultant reactions should therefore continue to act in Krishna consciousness seriously, even though there may be so many impediments. When such impediments arise, he should simply think of Krishna and expect his mercy. That is the only solace. If the devotee passes his days in that spirit, it is certain that he is going to be promoted to the abode of the Lord. By such activities, he earns his claim to enter into the kingdom of God. The exact word used in this verse is daya bhak. Daya bhak refers to the son's becoming the lawful inheritor of the property of the father. In a similar way, a pure devotee who is prepared to undergo all kinds of tribulations in executing Krishna conscious duties becomes lawfully qualified to enter into the transcendental abode. So the devotee does not shun tribulation. This is the point. He doesn't shun tribulations. But he gratefully accepts whatever tribulations come by the Lord's mercy upon him. Such a person sees Krishna within everything and everything within Krishna. He never feels that he is separated from Krishna even for a second. Now we will continue to the next item, which is remembrance. Somewhere, does anyone have any questions before we go to the next section? Does anyone have any questions about expecting the Lord's mercy? Yeah?
When we expect the Lord's mercy, I used to not be able to expect the Lord's mercy. It almost feels like it's, I don't know how to explain it. It's almost as if I'm maybe too fallen for the Lord to even know. And you almost just keep asking Him to, I don't know how to explain it, but expecting it is not a bad thing.
It's a matter of intelligence. Because actually the Lord is bestowing mercy on every single living entity at every minute, either directly through the spiritual nature or indirectly through the material nature. Everything that's happening to every single living entity throughout the totality of existence is the unadulterated mercy of the Lord upon that living being. So the mercy is already there. It's just a matter of realizing it. Do you think Krishna is ever cruel to any of his children?
Never.
No.
No.
Krishna is always bestowing mercy, even on the atheist. He allows the living entity to be put within the material nature to rectify him of his mistaken attitude of envy towards the Lord. That is the Lord's kindness. So actually, there's no question of the Lord being cruel to anyone. Krishna is simply giving unlimited mercy to all living entities at every minute. And how that mercy comes to us, that is our choice. How do you want the Lord's mercy? You want it indirectly through the material nature? Or do you want it directly through the spiritual nature? So by taking up the pathway of bhakti, we are electing to get the Lord's mercy through the spiritual nature. And that's the better version. You see? That's the superior way of getting the Lord's mercy, is through the spiritual nature, not through the material nature. Any more questions on expecting the Lord's mercy? All right, now we will go to the next item, remembrance. Some way or other, if someone establishes in his mind, his continuous relationship with Krishna, this relationship is called remembrance. About this remembrance, there is a nice statement in the Vishnu Purana where it is said, simply by remembering the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all living entities become eligible for all kinds of auspiciousness. Therefore, let me always remember the Lord who was unborn and eternal. In the Padma Purana, the same remembrance is explained as follows. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto the Supreme Lord Krishna, because if someone remembers him either at the time of death or during his span of life, he becomes freed from all sinful reactions. So we know that is the third item. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam. That remembrance, that ability to always remember Krishna, to always see everything in relationship with Krishna, that remembrance is developed only according to the degree of how deeply we dive into hearing and chanting. Sometimes people say, I don't need to chant Hare Krishna because I always think of Krishna. I will not chant. Because I'm always thinking of Krishna. I'm always Krishna conscious. But we can understand that is showbuttle. Unless one can actually dive into hearing and chanting, there's no question of always remembering Krishna. So we have to then become, if we want to qualify to remember the Lord perfectly, 24/7, then we have to become very expert in hearing and chanting. And then we can actually be empowered to remember the Lord constantly in all circumstances. One who is fully absorbed in remembering, you see, they see everything in relationship with Krishna. When they see anything, they see this is within Krishna and Krishna is within this thing. They are never separated from the Lord in any minute. Meditation. The last item in the chapter.
Prabhu?
Yes.
About this, the last statement that over here, during the span of one's life, one remembers Krishna even once, is free from all sin.
Yes, that is correct. But that, it is also qualified in the nectar devotion. There are many statements here of the incredibly wonderful benefits of the different aspects of bhakti. But there you'll find a qualifying statement here in the nectar devotion that states that it's according to the quality of how you did that activity. If one casually semi-remembered Krishna, you see, then you don't get the same result as someone who deeply, deeply dives into remembering Krishna. So to actually become completely freed from all sinful reactions, it has to be a pretty intense remembrance. Therefore, it is advised that we should make our Krishna consciousness intense, very focused. Focused hearing, focused chanting, focused remembrance, everything focused, highly, highly focused. If we want to get the results of all these wonderful boons being offered here in the nectar devotion, that will come if we intensely engage in those activities. Not kind of halfway doing it, if you know what I mean. I'll give you a graphic example. Laser beam. Laser beam is a highly focused ray of light. And a laser beam can be so powerful it can burn through metal. So powerful it can be. So when we engage in chanting, we engage in hearing, we engage in remembering the Lord, we must do it with laser-focused consciousness. Very, very, very intensely focused consciousness. Because just as that laser beam can burn through metal, we can burn through the millions of layers of contamination which is sitting upon our heart after millions of lifetimes of trying to rebel against the authority of the Lord here in this material existence. You understand? Yeah. So this refers to someone who, to actually get, by one act of hearing, to become free from all sinful reactions requires pretty intense hearing. It applies to hearing also. To be able to remember the Lord at a particular time during your span of life with such potency that you become free of all sinful reactions, that's a very intense remembrance of the Lord. Very deep, deep remembrance. Of course, it is also described that simply by seeing Lord Jagannath, people become free of all sin. But what they do after the festival, you see. It's like, what is that? Husti snan. You see, the elephant, he takes a very nice bath, but then he gets out and he rolls in the dirt. So one can remember Krishna and become free of sin, but then immediately you engage in nonsense again. So the idea is to make your remembrance of Krishna so deep that you experience so much nectar from that remembrance that you would never dream of going back to sense gratification ever again. if someone's remembrance is so deep that you don't want anything else, you see? That's, this example is given by, you may know, it is wonderful shloka given by Jamunacharya. You know that shloka? Yadavadi bhattanari sangame smaryamane bhavati mukashushtu nishtivanam cha. Actually, that was the second half. I think I'm missing part of it. See, yadavadi. How does it? Is it yadavadi? Begins with yadavadi mama cheta krishna padara vinde nava nava rasa damanud yatarantu masit tadavadi bhattanari sangame smaryamane bhavati mukashushtiv nishtimanamcha. You know that? Very nice shloka. He says that ever since I have been engaged in this wonderful process known as Krishna consciousness, absorbing myself in hearing, chanting, and remembering the Lord, you see, I am deriving ever-increasing nectar at every step from this activity of Krishna bhakti. And then, if in this, while tasting like this, Krishna bhakti's nectar, if the thought of sex pleasure enters my brain, I just want to spit the thought, you see. So if one deeply experiences the nectar of remembering Krishna, so deeply that the thought of any type of material sense pleasure is disgusting to him, that person has become free from sinful reactions.
So in the chapter of the Ajami, the Yamdudas were told Yamdudas were told by the Vishudas that, I mean, he has already been freed from his millions of sins just by chanting Narayan unknowingly. So I think there is still the roots apply over there. I mean, that even if you take away the sin, I mean, even if you, right, because he wasn't knowing, he wasn't kind of, his attention was towards his son.
He didn't go back to Godhead immediately also.
Yeah. But I mean,
he got an extension. Then he went to Hardwar and did and prepared himself to go back to Kanda. He got an extension.
So, like, my point was that, like, I mean, like, when somebody says unknowingly the name of Krishna, he definitely gets rid of his sin. But then he keeps doing it more. That's his problem. He keeps doing it again. That's his problem. But he definitely, when we try to do some Harinam distribution, people definitely get benefit. They definitely get rid of their sins just by hearing or remembering Krishna. I mean, even if they are not attentive, but then they keep doing the sins. That's
see, the thing was, the special mercy he got, it was right at the time of death, because then he had no opportunity for more sin. You see? If somebody hears the Harinam party and they die of a heart attack right after they heard, they're going to get some special mercy, because they had no opportunity to do any more sins. They got purified by hearing the Harinam party and they died of a heart attack. They get some very special mercy, you see. But if they live on and they go ahead and go into the bar, they have a few drinks, you know, they eat a hamburger or whatever after hearing the Harinam, and it's husti snan, elephant bed. Okay, any other questions?
But it leads to sukruti, right?
Mm-hmm.
It gives sukruti to them, right? Adnat sukruti. Suppose the Rath Yatra is going and somebody watches it. And
yes,
one
yes.
Person gets on it, then his spiritual life begins, right? It's not like
they are getting. They have. Anyone who comes in contact with Krishna consciousness in any way, shape, or form, prasadam in a prasadam restaurant, the Rath Yatra, the Harinam party, a book, you know, even seeing a devotee walking down the street, these things are giving them sukriti. That's a fact. One time Prabhupada explained like this, that it's like a bank account. One's spiritual assets are increasing. You see, they get a book, they get some spiritual assets. They read the book, they get more spiritual assets. They come to the temple, they get more spiritual assets. It's just increasing until finally you have enough sukriti that you can actually surrender. So we should be very enthusiastic to continue our preaching activities, because every time we go out preaching, we're bestowing sukriti. Actually, Krishna is doing it through us. We're bestowing sukriti on on everyone. So the Harinam party is just doing massive Sukriti emanation on everyone in the area.
If that person goes and does scenes again, then it's not like Hastistan, right? It's not total waste. That some seed.
Oh no, it's not wasted. I mean, the Sukriti, even though he's doing the, that's right. It's a rough analogy. Every analogy that's given always has its breaking point. The fact is, even though they went ahead and engaged in some sinful activity after the hearing the Harinam party, the asset that they inherited or achieved by hearing that Harinam party, that's their eternal asset. Even if they went out and murdered somebody after they heard the Harinam party, still the benefit of hearing the Harinam party is eternally theirs. Is there a difference between someone who knows and engages in sin and someone who doesn't know?
Would there be a difference in benefits? One who is acting in Krishna conscious knowingly and one who just...
Oh, acting in Krishna consciousness. Knowingly acting in Krishna consciousness will naturally give you a deeper, more intense absorption in that activity. A person who unknowingly just happens to hear the Harinam party go by, his intensity of absorption or his depth of absorption in the holy name will not be as deep as a person who realizes that this is the goal of my existence, to be totally absorbed in hearing, chanting, remembering the name and fame, pastimes, entourage, paraphernalia, entourage, etc. of the Supreme Lord.
Wouldn't it also depend on one's consciousness at that time?
The devotee will naturally be more conscious.
No, I mean to say that one who is just fearing Harinam.
Yes, according to one, there are different degrees of consciousness. A pious person will, in all likelihood, be more sensitive to what's going on. He will be more likely to appreciate it than a highly impious person, for example. Just like the rain falls everywhere, but certain portions of the earth get more benefit. If there is when it falls on the pavement, the soil underneath the pavement doesn't get any rainwater. It rolls off the pavement. But the soil, which is completely open and exposed, it becomes very nicely drenched with the rainwater. So the mercy of Krishna is flowing in the form of the Sankirtan movement. And there are those who will get great advantage of it and those who will not get such great advantage because they are deeply covered. But even they will get benefit. Even the most covered will get the benefit. That is confirmed by Krishna Das Kaviraj. Satjana, the pious men, and also Durjana, everyone is benefited. You see? Any other questions? So we will move on and finish the chapter, if we can do that in the allotted time. To meditate means to engage the mind in thinking of the form of the Lord, the qualities of the Lord, the activities of the Lord, and the service of the Lord. Meditation does not mean anything impersonal or void. According to Vedic literature, meditation is always on the form of Vishnu. Indeed, in the Singha Purana, there is a statement about meditation on the form of the Lord. It is said there, meditation focusing on the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead has been accepted as transcendental and beyond the experience of material pain and pleasure. By such meditation, even one who is grossly miscreant can be delivered from the sinful reactions of his life. In the Vishnu Dharma, there is a statement about meditation on the transcendental qualities of the Lord. Persons who are constantly engaged in Krishna consciousness and who remember the transcendental qualities of the Lord become free from all reactions and sinful activities. And after being so cleansed, they become fit to enter into the kingdom of God. In other words, no one can enter into the kingdom of God without being freed from all sinful reactions. One can avoid sinful reactions simply by remembering the Lord's form, qualities, pastimes, etc. So the first paragraph talks about meditating on the lotus feet. The second paragraph now talks about meditating on the qualities. And now we'll move to the next item. In the Padma Purana, there's a statement about remembering the activities of the Lord. A person who is always engaged in meditation on the sweet pastimes and wonderful activities of the Lord surely becomes freed from all material contamination. So there's three items now. There's feet, qualities, and pastime. In some of the Puranas, the evidence is given that if someone is simply meditating on devotional activities, he has achieved the same result as and has seen face to face the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's a pretty powerful statement. Wake up, wake up. That's a pretty powerful statement. That just by meditating on devotional activities, it is equated with seeing Krishna face to face. That's a pretty powerful thing. Pretty powerful. In this connection, there is a story in the Brahma Vaivarta Purana that in the city of Pratishtanapur in South India. Anyone here from South India? Do you know that city? No one knows? Okay. There was once a Brahmin who was not very well-to-do, but who was nevertheless satisfied in himself, thinking that it was because of his past misdeeds and by the desire of Krishna that he did not get sufficient money in opulence. So he was not at all sorry for his poor material position, and he used to live very peacefully. He was very open-hearted, and sometimes he went to hear some lectures delivered by great self-realized souls. At one such meeting, while he was very faithfully hearing about Vaishnava activities, he was informed that these activities can be performed even by meditation. In other words, if a person is unable to actually perform Vaishnava activities physically, he can meditate upon the Vaishnava activities and thereby acquire all of the same results. Because the Brahmin was not very well to do financially, he decided that he would simply meditate on grand royal devotional activities. And he began this business thus. Of course, this is not an excuse. Thinking, well, why should we go to the endeavor of building a new temple if we can just meditate on it and get the same result? No. We should not take this as an excuse to get out of devotional activities. Well, I don't really feel like cooking the offerings, so I'll just meditate on cooking the offerings. No. Do not take this in the wrong way. He had no means to do this, so therefore he meditated on it. He absolutely had no means. Just like you may be sick in bed. Or sometimes when we preach, we're arrested also. Just like I was arrested for distributing Back to Godhead magazine, you see. And I spent 36 hours in jail, you see. So if you're in some situation where you're physically not able to do service, you can meditate on the service. Look like you're in the hospital recovering from surgery, you know. You can meditate on offering an arti, you know. It's not an excuse that if you're able to do something but you don't want to do it, you just meditate on it. No, don't take it in the wrong way. Sometimes he would take his bath in the river Godavari. After taking his bath, he would sit in a secluded place on the bank of the river. And by practicing the yoga exercises of pranayama, the usual breathing exercises, he would concentrate his mind. These breathing exercises are meant to mechanically fix the mind upon a particular object, a particular subject. That is the result of the breathing exercises and also of the different sitting postures of yoga. Formerly, even quite ordinary persons used to know how to fix the mind upon the remembrance of the Lord. And so, the Brahman was doing this. When he had fixed the form of the Lord in his mind, he began to imagine in his meditations that he was dressing the Lord very nicely in costly clothing with ornaments, helmets, and other paraphernalia. Then he offered his respectful obeisances by bowing down before the Lord. After finishing the dressing, he began to imagine that he was cleansing the temple very nicely. After cleansing the temple, he imagined that he had many water jugs made of gold and silver, and he took all those jugs to the river and filled them with the holy water. Not only did he collect water from the Godavari, but he collected from the Ganges, Jamuna, Narmada, and Kaveri. Generally, a Vaishnava, while worshipping the Lord, collects water from all of these rivers by mantra chanting. We have that mantra, actually. Gange cha Jamuna chaiva Godavari Saraswati Sindhu Kaveri Dalisandarinam Kuru. This Brahman, instead of chanting some mantra, imagined that he was physically securing water from all these rivers in golden and silver water pots. Then he collected all kinds of paraphernalia for worship, flowers, fruits, incense, and sandalwood pulp. He collected everything to place before the deity. All these waters, flowers, and scented articles were then very nicely offered to the deities to their satisfaction. Then he offered arati, and with the regulator principles, he finished all these activities in the correct worshipping method. He would daily execute similar performances as his routine work, and he continued to do so for many, many years. Then one day, the Brahman imagined in his meditations that he had prepared some sweet rice with milk and sugar and offered the preparation to the deity. However, he was not very satisfied with the offering because the sweet rice had been prepared recently and it was still very hot. This preparation, sweet rice, should not be taken hot. The cooler the sweet rice, the better its taste. Sometimes in ISKCON, I've been given sweet rice that was hot, but it definitely doesn't have the same flavor as the cool sweet rice. The sweet rice must always be served nice and cool, because the cooler, the sweeter. Prabhupada says here, right here. So, because the sweet rice had been prepared by the Brahmin very recently, he wanted to touch it so that he could know whether it was fit for eating by the Lord. As soon as he touched the sweet rice pot with his finger, he immediately was burnt by the heat of the pot. In this way, his meditation broke. Now, when he looked at his finger, he saw that it was burnt. And he was wondering in astonishment how this could have happened. Because he was simply meditating on touching the hot sweet rice, he never thought that his finger would actually become burnt. While he was thinking like this, and Vaikuntha Lord Narayan, seated with the goddess of fortune Lakshmi, began to smile humorously. This means the Lord is watching his devotees, you understand? Krishna is seeing what his devotees are doing. So we should all never do any nonsense activities. Krishna is seeing. We have to be very careful what we're doing, even the thoughts in our mind. We have to be very careful how we're thinking, speaking, and acting, because Krishna can see everything. You understand? Yeah. On seeing this smiling of the Lord, all the goddesses of fortune attending the Lord became very curious and asked Lord Narayan why was he smiling. The Lord, however, did not reply to their inquisitiveness, but instead immediately sent for the Brahmana. An airplane sent from Vaikuntha immediately brought the Brahmana into Lord Narayan's presence. When the Brahman was thus present before the Lord and the goddesses of fortune, the Lord explained the whole story. The Brahman was then fortunate enough to get an eternal place in Vaikuntha in the association of the Lord and his Lakshmis. This shows how the Lord is all-pervading, in spite of his being locally situated in his abode. Although the Lord was present in Vaikuntha, he was present also in the heart of the Brahman when he is meditating on the worshipping process. Thus we can understand that things offered by the devotees, even in meditation, are accepted by the Lord, and they help one achieve the desired result. So the point is that we should be, if we want to taste the nectar of devotion, we should hear with great intensity, deeply, deeply diving into the nectarian ocean of Krishna Shravanam. We should expect the Lord's mercy to manifest in all ways upon us. We should dive deeply into Smaranam, and we should always be in a very meditative mood of trying to offer everything for the pleasure of Krishna, because Krishna is there within us at every minute. So everything that we do, what does Krishna say? Yat karoshi, yad ashnasi, yaj jahosi dadasi, yat yat tapashashi kaunteya, tat karushva madarpanam. We should be very meditative. Everything that we do, we should do for Krishna. In a loving way. That, my dear Lord, I am doing this for you, kindly accept. You see? In a humble mood, in a loving spirit, everything that we do, every thought of our mind, every word that comes out of the mouth, and every action we perform with our body, we must all make it an offering to Krishna. And in this way, we will surely taste the nectar of devotion at every minute, and that nectar will become sweeter and sweeter and sweeter. It will be the sweetest sweet rice. Is it? And we will surely go back to home, back to Godhead, the time of leaving this body. So, we have 5 minutes left in my... I'm supposed to leave here at 4:30. I've been, according to my boss, he told me at 4:30 I'm leaving, so going to my next program. At 4:30, so I have 5 minutes left. If any of you have any questions,
Thank you very much, Maharaj. I wanted to ask the Brahmin who was taken by the airplane to Vaikuntha because of his intense loving meditation. What does this imply? It means that he left his body, and what could be the implication of this to his family members?
Let's take it one question at a time. It makes it easier. Did he leave his body? That's the question. Well, generally people do leave their bodies and they go back in their spiritual body. However, there are cases sometimes when one goes back to Godhead in the self-same body, and that body becomes transformed into a spiritual body. As in the case described, the Pandavas did that. So, since it wasn't described here exactly, you know, how that happened, we don't know. But it really doesn't matter either way, because the body is a shell anyway. So whether his body became transformed into a spiritual body, or, you know, his physical body, you know, just expired there on the bank of the Godavari, and he got into the airplane in his spiritual body, the end result is the same. So what was the next question?
If he left his body, I was going to ask, what could be the implication of that on his family?
Well, is it described that he had a family? I don't remember reading that he even had a family. Was there any mention of his family members here?
No.
Doesn't mention the family member. But if there were family members, If one family member goes back to Godhead, the other family members automatically become liberated. So if there were family members, they were very fortunate. Their father and their husband, their uncle or whatever, he went back to Godhead. They all get liberated because of them. Yes.
Prabhu, while thinking about this particular pastime or this particular service, I mean, the Brahman was thinking all along his life that he was doing nicest worship of the Lord. So in the same way, can we say that, I mean...
Wait a minute. He may have been thinking, actually, I'm not doing very nice worship, but it's the best I can do.
Best I can do. Yeah. So my point is that, like, in same way, like, if we have some sort of a dream to serve the Lord, but we don't have the means to fulfill it, but if we keep thinking it, the Lord is so much bhavgrahi.
Yes.
He takes our bhav and then he thinks that actually...
He takes the sincerity.
He takes that actually we did that service, or he will actually fulfill that mood and service.
Krishna, even if you sincerely are trying to do something, Krishna sees that, and even if you're not successful in doing it, you still get the benefit of having sincerely tried to do it. I'll give you a graphic example. Prabhupada explains in his Bhagavatam purport. He describes what is a Krishna conscious being. Now, I would like to ask, are we supposed to be Krishna conscious beings?
We are trying to become Krishna conscious.
Are we supposed to be Krishna conscious beings?
Yes.
We're supposed to be.
Yes.
We're trying to be. That's what we're supposed to be, right? Yeah. That's why our society is, what is the name? The International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So we're trying to be as a fact. We feel that we're not, that's a fact. We know that we're not really Krishna conscious. If we're honest, we have to admit I'm not really Krishna conscious. But we know our duty is to become Krishna conscious. So anyway, Prabhupada describes he says a Krishna conscious being is always thinking how to deliver all of suffering humanity back to home, back to Godhead. And even if he is not successful in doing that, his perfection is guaranteed. And anyone who follows him, they will also become, their perfection will also be there. So the point is the sincerity of the attempt.
Exactly.
Let's say I have a family member, I want to make him a devotee, you know. And I tried my whole life to make him a devotee, but I could never do that. But I always had that desire that they should become a devotee. So Krishna, even though you weren't successful in making them a devotee, Krishna blesses you because you're always thinking, I really want to make that person a devotee. I really wanted to. I always tried my best, you see. So Krishna does reward you for the sincere desire to do something, even if you're not able to do it. He does reward you, that's the thing. So therefore, we should have big desires. We should have big desires to make the whole world Krishna conscious, actually. That should be our desire.
Last week we had the Mahatma Prabhu, and he was telling the same thing, that we should all have something that we can never do that. We have those kind of a vision and plan. Then that means something we are doing. I mean, we should have those plans always in our mind. That so I think it's probably the same mood and same thinking.
Yeah, we should always try to do the most. Always try to do something really wonderful. You know, Prabhupada told us one time, he said, you're always saying, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Why don't you do something? Why don't you become glorious? See, that is the greatest glorification of the spiritual master. The disciple becomes glorious because what is that Sanskrit saying? Palena parichyate. You judge a thing by its result.
By the fruits.
So if you want to actually glorify your Guru Maharaj, then you should become glorious in all of your activities. People say, oh, this is a disciple of this Swami or this Maharaj. Oh, he's such an amazing devotee. Who is his guru? You see? So that is the greatest glorification you can do of your Guru Maharaj. You become glorious. You become a great devotee. Not thinking you're great, of course. Then you become rotten. But thinking that you're not great, you should do wonderful things for your spiritual master and for Krishna and Prabhupada. And that way you'll be the greatest glorification of your spiritual master. So my time has run out. And I thank you all very much for so kindly giving me this opportunity to absorb myself in remembering this wonderful, wonderful philosophy, Krishna consciousness. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Nectar of devotion ki jai.
Jai.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much
for
being a nice association, nice class. And future
value, I was invited to guest speaker. We invite him to something like something in future
also. Thank you very much.
Thank you. 5:15. So I'll be giving the next lecture at 5:15.
Yes.
All right. 5:15. Okay. Hare Krishna.